Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Hey everyone, it's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today's cool fact of the day is that ants only rest for 2 8-minute periods a day, and only during one of those periods is there a decrease in brain activity in black and red ants, at least, that resembles sleep. But if you're a soldier ant, there's more activity during your rest period, so they apparently never sleep at all, which is one reason you probably don't want to be an ant. There are others.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's guest is a pleasure to have on the show, and he's a guy who closed out the second annual Bulletproof Biohacker Conference with an audience of more than 500 people. He's a former Golden Gloves boxer and star of a documentary project called One More Round. The guy I'm talking about, if you're a fan of Bulletproof or you went to the conference, you already know I'm talking about David Wakman. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Now, you've been an artistic director for more than 285 plays globally, but you also have this side of you where you're a fighter, and you, for people who haven't heard of you, you know, you were substantially overweight, and you decided in your 40s that you're going to go back and fight a pro fight. So it's kind of a shocking real world comeback story, and you're right in the middle of making it happen. So I wanted to interview you today and talk about what your motivation was for doing something that, you know, honestly could kill you. You know, you take a punch from a pro fighter and you're not ready for it. Bad things can happen. So why are you, you know, why did you decide to go back into the ring in your mid 40s after having been pretty far out of shape?
I think the major deciding factor was losing Eddie Tyler, who was my trainer and father figure, almost like a brother to me, and watching him pass away his last 8 days at the hospice made me realize that something was missing in my life, and that I was almost like dead men walking for many, many years. And there was a lot of doors that weren't closed. You know, I was ranked in a world as an amateur, and I walked away from it, and I seemed to walk away from a lot of things that I was doing well with, and it just, no matter what I did, I just never felt alive. So I felt going back in the ring at this age was an incredible task, and it was something that, that Eddie and I could cherish, and that could actually, that fight could stop the inner fights within me forever, you know?
So on stage at the Bulletproof Conference, you talked quite openly about how you had a really an emotionally distant and unsupportive upbringing. I had some really serious trauma as a child in Morocco. And do you think that, that those early traumas lead you to focus on adversity through going into the ring? Or is there something deeper going on with you? Because, I mean, it was pretty amazing. I mean, I've seen your trailer, and we're going to link to it here in the show notes and all on the Bulletproof site. But, I mean, you're working your ass off, to be perfectly frank, way more than a normal guy who wants to lose 70 or 100 pounds. You're pushing to go from, like, well, I'm pretty darn unhealthy. So one of your mentors dies, but have you thought about where the decision to go that far into that direction comes from? Do you think it's your childhood, or is it something else?
I think it's a combination of things. I think you come to, at least for me, I came to a point in my life where I wanted to not only bury what happened, but really face them head on and come to peace with it, you know? That's Morocco, that's what happened to me in Morocco, that's the upbringing I had with my family. And that's also the fact of walking away from things and Eddie, and I felt very guilty watching Eddie pass away and walking away from my career when at the time that's what that's all you had. So it was a compilation of things, you know. You know, through this journey, the physicality is obviously extremely hard, but I feel the mental challenge has been probably twice as hard, you know, facing all the, you know, you're like in a dark tunnel and there's no light, and you keep pushing and pushing and hoping that you'll see that light. And all along you're walking in this gyms and you have these 20-year-olds that are trying to take turns at you, and your mind wants to go somewhere your body can't, you know. So you keep pushing and struggling and hoping that something will happen.
Well, you've got a lot of courage, but you're willing to just talk about some of your formative experiences, and also just to go out there, like you said, going to the gym where there's guys half your age who are out there frankly trying to kick your ass. So you've definitely got something special going on there, that willingness to just drive and push yourself. And you've also got this enormous problem to hack in that, you know, it's not just age, it's age plus your health status and things like that. And the reason that I'm particularly interested in how you're doing this is I think a lot of listeners for Bulletproof Radio are in a similar situation where, you know, there's a lot of stuff they could have done, they didn't do. We all make trade-offs for family or for career or for whatever. And then you hit a certain point, you're like, well, wait, I still could do that, but it feels insurmountable. And you're like, I don't care if it's insurmountable, I'm just going to do it anyway. and then I'll make a movie about it at the same time, which is way cool. I can't wait to see one more round when it comes out. Out of all the things that you're dealing with, age, physical problems, what's been the single toughest hill for you to climb?
Well, you know, it's funny, David, is at different times through this, you know, we've been shooting for 2 years now. We're hopefully wrapping the film in August or September. And there's been adversity all along. And like at one point, it was my weight. Another point, it was massive injuries. I mean, I just went through 4-hour operations on my foot. Another point, you go through financial crisis where for 2 years I had to turn down every single job and put all my funds into it and try to get investors in it. And so you have to wear your producing hat. At the same time, you have to be the subject matter. So depending on the month, the obstacle changes. But I think if I was to say overall, the mental challenge has been the hardest thing. You know, going back into your past, sitting down with the family and trying to have a conversation when there's never communications in 45 years. Sitting down with your psychologist and facing your past and trying to overcome it and understand it and kind of move forward from it. seeing your daily habituals and try to change who you are. It's just, you know, we're creatures of habits. It's really hard to change who we are. So trying to change that, and so probably the mental has probably been the hardest.
Do you draw a line between mental versus emotional?
You know, it's a very fine line. Some things cross over and some things are strictly mental. Some things are just, you know, you get up and you struggle to just be positive, you know? Or it's not so much emotional, it's more of a mental struggle, and sometimes you can't. Sometimes you get up and you're in a bad mood and it takes you half a day before you get out of that mood.
What do you do on a day like that? Like, you wake up, your body hurts, you feel old, you got a headache, and you're like, man, I don't want to train today. I don't want to do this anymore. How do you psych yourself up to get up and do what you're going to do?
I first start by yelling at my producer, Ashley. No.
An honest answer.
I think the worst part about it is not wanting to work out. It's when you get up and everything hurts, you know?
Yeah.
You get up and just everything hurts, you know? Through many years of boxing and playing soccer and just being a very assertive teenager, I've acquired a lot of injuries, past injuries. So you have all these injuries and you just suck it up. You get up and you suck it up. And for some reason, when I start sweating, when I'm in the gym and I start working out, the love comes back. You know, there's boxing, I'm sure you've heard of, is an extremely addictive sport, you know? And I missed it. And I didn't realize how much I missed it until I'm back in there duking out, sparring and working out. And but you don't. You get up and this is something you have to do. It's my job. So you get up and you go and do it, you know, and that's it.
Now, one of the reasons that I think boxing may be addictive, and I'm not a boxer, but I've done a lot of work with Stephen Kotler, who was the keynote at the Bulletproof Conference, the same one where you were the final speaker. He talks a lot about flow state, and you know, if you're in the ring, you know, you've got your hands up. If you do it wrong, you're going to take it one in the face. So, I mean, are you in a flow state pretty much whenever you're sparring where things kind of slow down and you're sort of in the zone, or is it not quite that extreme?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to a friend of mine. He said to me, the weirdest thing that I ever see when you get in the ring is you get extremely, extremely calm, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens also. God forbid I'm outside and somebody approaches me and I get extremely calm, because the best way to see punches come and the best way to avoid and the best way to think in and out of the ring when something attacks you is when you're in an extremely calm state of mind. So I'm probably the calmest I've ever been when I'm in a ring, you know? So yeah, I guess I would be in that flow state.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but yeah, when there's enough danger, calmness is the only answer, and I think that's where a lot of athletes are going. I first noticed that when I was, I don't know, late teens, early 20s, I was one of the early guys into mountain biking, and I would do these downhill things, you know, 25, 30 miles an hour on rough terrain. Like, if you stop paying attention, you're pretty much going to die, so you pay attention so well that you can be calm. And it may be even worse for people with a little bit of ADD or some other mental characteristics like that. But all of a sudden, like, all right, you can just do it. Same thing, you know, driving faster than 75 miles an hour is probably good for you if you're someone with a brain like that, not bad for you. So you go into that and you seek that in the ring, and you've identified that it makes you happy. But you're 45. You're going to do a pro fight, hopefully in August or September. You're looking to schedule it. It looks like in a few months in June. So you're gonna have your fight, but let's, you know, win or lose, I doubt you're gonna launch a successful pro career with the number of injuries you've had at 45. So you're gonna go back and you're gonna do what you didn't do the first time, and I've got great respect for you doing that. How are you gonna keep yourself in that state after that fight? How are you gonna keep from gaining those 70 pounds back? How are you gonna take these changes and make them permanent in your life?
Well, I think the diet is a way of life. It's not really a diet. I see it as a way of life. Eating healthy. You know, I something had shut off 22 years ago where I just didn't care, you know? I didn't care about working out. I didn't care about looking good. I didn't care about eating right. I just didn't care. Where today, I very much care. Something has flip through this journey that made me realize that I do want to eat right. I do want to be healthy. I do want to go, keep going to the gym after this fight. I mean, of course, I'm not going to fight again, but I will go and spar and box and run and do my road work and feel good and look good. But most of all, I just feel great when I eat right, you know, and where in the past I would feel like crap, but it was such a everyday thing that I really didn't care. Like, food became my best friend. You know, being alone and picking out for the TV was my best friend.
So, by the way, I haven't asked you outright, what are you eating these days anyway as you're training?
Well, sometimes I go through like periods where I'll juice for 2 weeks and and I'll clean, you know, I'll go through a cleansing and then I'll go back and I'll have just like right amount, like a 40% protein, 25% carb, 20% fat, and then I'll up the protein with shakes. So overall, I have about 55 to 60% protein throughout the day.
Wow, that's a lot. And that's because you're trying to put on the muscle mass?
Yeah, and also decrease the, you know, I'm so sensitive to carbohydrates and sugars in general that unlike other people, even though my metabolism has raised, I look at bread and I get fat. So I have to be I have to be very careful with that. You know, so I try to have about 3 meals and 2 snacks throughout the day. Like now I just had this foot surgery, so I have to let about 5-6 weeks for the bone to heal. After that, I'll cleanse to drop 20 pounds, just juicing. Like just purely like 80% vegetables, 20% juice.
Wow. Now, when you do that though, you're also training for muscle mass now, so you can cut 20 pounds certainly with juicing. But are you going to lose physical performance when you do that?
Well, I do it. I'm doing it while I'm still recuperating on my foot. So you have a 12-week recovery. The first 7 weeks, I make sure I eat proper protein for the bone to heal. And then the latter 5 weeks, I can't get in the gym anyway. Then I'll juice, I'll swim. I'll do like a one workout, just swim and juice and physical therapy. So by the time I get to the gym, I'm down around 210. And then I could do my 2 workouts a day and eat properly again.
Have you started taking supplements to speed bone healing?
No, I take the general stuff, multivitamins, glucamine, but I usually take that when I start working out and stuff like that.
So you might want to check out vitamin K2 and vitamin D3. Those things do speed bone healing. You take some magnesium, boron, silica, stuff like that is actually shown in studies to increase the rate of bone deposition. So you can probably shave your recovery window down by a little bit or just have a stronger, like more complete recovery afterwards. Potentially adding L-glutamine, the amino acid, in a higher amount during away from other foods could also potentially speed wound healing. There's a couple studies about that. But I've looked at the post-surgical recovery protocols for my own use. I've had 3 knee surgeries. And just, you know, if you're injured and you want to come back quickly, it's interesting how you can tweak those little variables, just like you can tweak, you know, the number of workouts per week or the intensity or the timing and all that, and maybe get a little bit of an advantage.
Definitely. I'll definitely look into it. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Do you know who you're going to fight? Who you want to fight?
No, I don't. I the guy could be 20 years old. The guy could be, I don't know.
You're not going to go on TV and call him out and be like, you're a punk ass kid. I'm going to beat you down. Nothing like that.
No, I don't have any enemies, but, I guess the promoter would set that up. You know,
if you had your dream fight, who would it be?
It would be the guy that I lost to in the finals in the Golden Gloves when I was 23 years old.
Have you tracked him down?
I have tracked him down after the fight, and he had went into the Air Force or something, but didn't want to fight.
Oh, bummer. So you actually asked him, and he said no?
I did. I asked him a few times.
Oh, that's too bad.
I had to live with that loss for 20 years.
That's been pretty remarkable. So you haven't figured out who yet, but your promoter's going to work on it. And now you're basically putting all of your energy, all of your willpower into this. And how's that affecting what you do in your artistic director side of things? You know, you've had a successful career there. It seems like this would take, you know, 2 workouts a day, and that much protein would be really hard to do.
Well, I As far as the theater is concerned, I've walked away from theater in July 2011, and we focus strictly on TV and film. We have about 12 series, one-hour dramas, and a few features that we were slated to do that I couldn't really go forward with. This is a full-time job. You know, you get up at 6:30 in the morning or 6 in the morning doing your first run. Then you come back, you get breakfast, and then literally 45 minutes, you got your second workout. And then, then the filmmaker head comes on and I got to watch, post what they do. Then we have a lot of sponsors that I have responsibilities for, that we make promos for, that we do different things for that help us through this journey. So, like I said prior, I mean, financially, this has been, I didn't think this journey was going to be as extensive as it got. And I thought I'd go in, I'd wrap this up in a year. Foolish that I was. That's not the case. The movie got way bigger and more responsibility on my part. So I had to put a pause on everything. Hopefully when this film comes out, Sundance or Toronto or Cannes, then HFC Patriots will revive.
Got it. So you've really got a lot more writing on this fight than just winning or reconquering an old loss. You've also got a lot of your career online for it.
Right now, David, this is my entire life. Literally.
What's going to happen if you fight and you don't win?
Well, I'm going to win.
I like that answer.
But the fight, the winning or losing is irrelevant, really, to the storyline. I mean, but in my heart, when I first started this, I really didn't care if I won or lost. I wanted to get in the ring, and I wanted to get over, go through this journey and overcome my demons. And I felt if I got in the ring, it'd be my last fight. Win or lose, doesn't matter. But somewhere within this journey, I lost my brother about 11 months ago. Somewhere between 11 months ago and today, something just clicked, and I need to win, and I will win, and I can't see it any other way.
I got it. Well, that manifesting things into reality thing certainly seems to work. What are you doing from a coaching perspective? Like who coaches you? How do you rely on experts in order to help you? Basically, I don't want to say cheat because that has a negative connotation, but I'll say it anyway. How do you cheat within the rules? How do you take full advantage of the opportunities you have? Like who's on your team? Who's in your corner?
Well, we have Dr. Andrew Yellen, who's my psychologist, Cynthia Lloyd-Darce, who's my life coach, but Panda, Juan Pandel Martinez, who's my trainer. And it's been pretty amazing because through this journey, I've went through numerous trainers, maybe 3-4. It was really hard for me to team up with somebody after what I had with Eddie, And it was very different. At that time, I was ranked, I was young. People were coming out of woodwork to want to train me. Today, I'm a 45-year-old guy. They know there's no future. They see the journey, they see the story and they get moved by it. But Juan Panda Martinez has been awesome. It's probably the closest thing to Eddie. And it's really helpful when you got somebody in your corner that believes in you and you guys have that tightness. It makes you want to, it really makes you want to work out harder and it makes you want to get out and succeed in every corner. So as far as my training is concerned, it's Juan Martinez. As far as my mental and vision for this journey, it's Cynthia Lloyd-Darce and Dr. Andrew Young.
What are the other places that you go to basically track your performance, help you know your training is going the way you want it to go? Are there blogs? Are there other experts whose research you rely on? Like, how much of your time do you spend on kind of hacking yourself like that? Or is that something that you've mostly put in the hands of your trainer and your doctor?
Well, Dymatize has been a great sponsor that jumped on board and completely not only helped us financially, but they also helped us by sponsoring all sorts of pre-workout powder, to glutamine, to a protein powder, to all sorts of stuff that probably would make sense to you more than me. They tell me to take them and I take them and I feel better. And it's all natural, which is something that was really, really important to me. There's also Beverly Hills Rejuvenation Center, Dan and Devin who own it, that have been with me since the very start. and have been tracking my every move, you know, making sure that I'm healthy and stayed, and they've been really awesome.
What do you typically do when you go to Beverly Hills Rejuvenation Center? It sounds like an interesting place. Like, maybe I want to go there.
Yeah, well, you go in and you get what they do is they do a whole body checkup, you know, and they check for a whole blood test. Almost every 2 months, I go through a full blood test, making sure that, you know, all my hormones are intact and what's not missing, what's missing, you know, if I should eat less meat, if I should eat this, if my cholesterol is high and stuff like that, if I should get a certain doctor on board because my blood pressure is high. You know, when I first started this journey, everything was wrong. My cholesterol was high. My blood pressure was high. I was borderline diabetes. I mean, I was a complete mess. You know, and the first blood test was with them, and they were able to kind of guide me through it, you know.
How's your blood pressure now?
Oh, it's perfect. It's normal. It's perfect.
It's perfect. It's normal. Cool. If it starts trending in the wrong direction, there's a cool kind of training. It's called Zona Plus. It's something I've got on the website. It's based on fighter pilots. You do this grip strength training sort of thing, but it has a little computer feedback device. You squeeze it, and it, for 2 minutes, you squeeze just hard enough, not too hard, not too light, and it trains your nervous system to lower your blood pressure. It's the coolest piece of biofeedback tech I've ever really seen, and it's got effects on blood pressure. It's interesting, though, when you go to a place like the Beverly Hills Rejuvenation Center, anywhere you're getting data, you're on kind of the extreme edge of biohacking there. If you're getting data every 2 months, that's more than most people. I'd probably do mine every 4 to 6 months, depending on which data it is. I tend to get a lot. But you've got a team of professionals there who are looking at the data and helping you identify when it's going the wrong way. You've got a psychological and like emotional side of care, and you've got a sports training side of care. So you've basically got two focused professionals and then a team of data and specialist kind of people. They're all in your corner backing you up, even though in the ring you see sort of, you know, your main trainer.
Right.
Is that common? Are the guys you're fighting using that much data?
I think the guys that I'm fighting today are using a lot more. You know, back when I fought, you had your trainer and yourself. Today, they have strength coaches, they have weight coaches, they have, you know, life coaches, they have psychologists on board, they have so many dietitians, they have some of them have chefs. You know, obviously it depends where they are in their career. But in general, today, a boxer has a more equipped team than the old school. It's not as get out there, do your road work, and get in there and box like it used to be.
I understand that there's been shifts in almost every sport where people are really competitive, where, you know, we have chest strap monitors, you know, heart rate monitors, and we've got just amazing amounts of data. And some amount of the discipline that comes from being a very high-level athlete and competitor is not just doing the work, but then doing the analysis to figure out how you could do the work better. Do you spend a lot of time with your trainer sort of doing that? Like, if this sparring match wasn't as good as it could have been from a data perspective, or is it more sort of he watches you, he says, yeah, you're not moving fast enough, you need to go more to the left, or you're leading with your right, or whatever the other things you're doing?
It's more the latter. It's the second part. There's no, you know, Juan Panda Martinez is a very old school trainer, so there's not much data at all. It's more, you know, you need to do that, you need to keep your right hand up, and, you know, and usually talks are between rounds when he sees what I'm doing wrong and when he sees what I can capitalize with the other person. And then, of course, when we're not sparring, we work on different things where I can, you know, he'll work on my power or things that I lack or things that he feels that I can improve on.
That's really cool. I love hearing how things are shifting and hearing how someone is really pushing hard, like who supports you and how you build a network of people and tools and whatnot in order to help make things like that happen. There's some other goals you have going on. Like right now you're working to be a full-time athlete so you can finish documenting your story. Your film is pretty far along. You're going to schedule a pro fight in June and then hopefully fight in August or September. assuming you do all that stuff, are you doing like an Indiegogo? I haven't looked into the funding side of how you're making your thing go. Like, how are you funding the movie to get it out the door?
Well, obviously, for the big part, I've used a lot of my fundings. I've put a lot of my fundings into it. And then we've had, I'd say maybe 5 to 10% of it came from private investors. And then we've also had sponsors on board that came in and believed in the story. They put money, or some are renowned doctors that just put their services. Like, for example, Dr. Meyer, who just did the surgery on my foot. I mean, it would have cost me up in the high teens and the thousands if I didn't have them on board. So different funds came from different wares, and we're still, I mean, we're at our fourth phase, and we're still, you know, the budget originally started at $150,000 to $250,000. Today it's at $1.1 million.
Wow.
We spent $750,000 of it already. So we're still looking for the last $400,000 to finish the project. You gotta remember though, this is not the documentary that we set out to do. We shot in Morocco, we shot in France, we shot in Israel, we shot in Dominican Republic. What a small story evolved to the point where there's been interest in a TV series. We have 3 letters of intent from some of the biggest distribution houses. One of them from Canada, E1 Films, who distributed Hunger Games. So there's been a lot of interest that usually doesn't happen until you finish principal photography. But people have followed us. We just made front page in a newspaper in Casablanca, Morocco.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's been, and look at you, I'm talking to you, and you're a big deal, and we're grateful to be talking to you. So it's like a lot of things, we've been lucky in a lot of ways that people have been turned on by this story, and it's been really humbling. So it's been a mixture. It's one of those things when you think you're going to shut down, something miraculously happened and you get a check, or something happens and you keep going. Obviously, originally, the funding was going to be $250,000 and we had it covered. But as the story grew, it got better. But the good thing about this, David, is because it's become a major documentary now we're looking at theatrical release, where at one time, you know, it was ancillaries, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. I mean, that's what we're looking at, video rentals. Where now, you're looking at major theatrical release worldwide. It's got 4 different languages. You know, English is dominant, but you have 4 different languages within a documentary. And it touches anybody. It's just, you know, it's not about, it's almost like Rocky. It's not about boxing. It's more about a heartfelt human story and about second chances in life.
Well, you've done a lot more overcoming than just overcoming weight and age. You know, you didn't start out with a uplifting story, but you're turning what could have been a pretty unhappy life into what is an uplifting thing. And I think that's what makes one more round. It's what is likely to make one more round a really good film. Not that I've seen yet, because it's not done. But I'm excited to check it out when it comes. If you do have. If you do have the fight as planned, August or September, I'm not sure which month it would be, how long after that would people listening be able to see the film?
Well, right after the fight, we go back and shoot 3-4 days in New York, 3-4 days in Pittsburgh, wrap up the Eddie story, and then go to Morocco and wrap up the whole family and all the incidents that happened in Morocco, and then finalized post. So I'm hoping that by October, November, we'll be able to enter the major film festivals. Now, depending on what distribution team is on board, if we sell this film before or not, they'll have a say in that as well. You know, major film festivals are very hush-hush about keeping everything low-key, not showing more than 8 minutes and stuff like that. So hopefully the film will come out around November, December. That would be great.
Well, maybe we can hang out at a film festival together. I've got my documentary Moldy about environmental mold and what it's doing to people, a lot of human interest stories. And you know, because you've been filming for a couple of years, but I walked into this just saying, like, this is something that will affect a lot of people, that is affecting a lot of people, and they don't know about it, so I can tell the story. And the amount of work it takes to make a film, my God, I've spent 6 weeks of my life on the road and setting up lenses and cameras and lighting, and holy crap, I had no idea what I was getting into. You must spend a lot of time, like you're talking about all these on location things. how many people are working on your production? I mean, all the legal rights and all that kind of stuff, it's got to be like a dozen people or something.
Well, we have half a dozen in the intimate production, just, you know, producers, associate producers and all that. And then you have a whole bunch of camera, aside from your head DP, Patrice, and your head camera, which is Christophe Evans. You have over a dozen camera people coming in and out, you know. And then you have all, obviously, you know, your attorneys and your legal team and everybody else that comes in and out. But depending on the shoot, a shoot could be one person and it could be 30, 40 people and I, depending what you're shooting, where you're going to shoot, what needs to be grabbed. I'm thinking for the fight, we're probably going to have six cameras. So that's a crew of maybe 24 people with sound and stuff like that. You know, and depending, you know, so it can be small. You know, I come from a narrative world. You know, I've directed plays, I've directed films, and I've directed commercials. They've all been narrative. This is my first documentary. So I think what I bring to this, aside from the story, I bring a very narrative way of shooting it. So it's very edgy. It's very much like you're watching a feature film, you know, but it's a documentary, the style of shooting. I'm sure you can tell that from watching the trailer, that it's very raw, it's very in your face, it's very cinematically lit, you know?
Yeah, and we'll include the trailer in the show notes, and we'll link to it in the iTunes and the YouTube video and all that, so people can find it.
Thank you.
Where can people find out more about this? Is there a URL that you'd like them to go to?
Yeah, I would love for them to go on their www.onemoreround.com and email myself or Ashley Pontius, who's the other main producer, about how they can get involved or what they would like to know or anything. I mean, you know, this is a journey I'd like to show the rest of the world. And also to like us on Facebook, it'd be great. You know, people go in there and you know, they help us inspire people. I think I can't inspire people on my own unless I have a bunch of people with me to do it.
Awesome. If you had 3 recommendations, given everything you've learned so far, that you like to share with people, if people want to perform better, if you want to kick more ass, do these 3 things in your life, what would they be?
Okay. I would say commit to something, get up and do part of that thing, and no matter what, be persistent at it.
Awesome. Very, very concise. Did you rehearse that ahead of time, or you just knew?
No, I just know what I have to struggle with every day.
Awesome.
So I know that I committed to do one more round. I every day, no matter how I feel, I commit to doing something towards it, and I'm persistent till I get into that ring.
Well, David, thank you so much for coming on Bulletproof Radio today. I wish you best of luck in your fight and best of luck in getting one more round out the door. I'm really excited to see it.
David, thank you so much for interviewing me, and thank you for letting us be part of Bulletproof. It means a lot to myself and the whole team.
Well, we'll send you some more coffee beans, keep you all charged on the right kind of caffeine, and thanks.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love it if you went onto iTunes and said, hey, I like this. Give us a good recommendation. Give us a thumbs up. Like the Facebook page. And if you want to double down on that, please pick up a copy of The Bulletproof Diet. I'm still working on sales. I'm getting ready to start my next book. And selling a few more copies of The Bulletproof Diet actually moves the needle for how quickly the next book comes out. So if you got a copy, buy 2 more, please. Totally appreciate it. Have an awesome day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services.
Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.